Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 37. Welcome back to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live that life of your dreams. This episode is going to be sponsored by the Entrepreneur Architect Hybrid Proposal. It's the owner architect agreement that I developed for my own residential architecture firm, Five Cat Studio. It's simple, it's straightforward, easy to understand, and very, very client friendly. It will help you land more projects. Over 100 architects have purchased the Hybrid Proposal video course so far, and in it, I personally walk you through my proposal package step by step, page by page, and included in the course is a complete set of document templates, which you may download, modify, and start using for your own projects immediately. So if you're interested in learning more about Entrepreneur Architect Hybrid Proposal, head on over to entrearchitect.com/hybrid. So this week on the podcast, we're going to mix it up a little bit. We're going to do something a little bit different than every other week. Earlier today, actually, a few hours ago, I received an email from my good friend Bob Borson over at lifeofanarchitect.com. Bob sent me an email that said that he is putting together a blog post, which is going to come out tomorrow. I'm recording this the day before this is going to come out. The podcast is going to be released the same time as his blog post. And he's invited a bunch of us architect bloggers to contribute to his little project here. He often gets questions through his Life of an Architect blog from readers that are interested about architects, you know, what architects do, how they work, how we think, our interests, the things we like, the things we don't like. And so Bob has put together a list of questions, and he's going to answer them himself and on his blog on July 10th, and that's when this podcast will be released, July 10th, 2014, if you're listening to this in the future. Hello, future. So he's invited me, and he's invited a bunch of other people. If you heard my podcast last week, I talked about being at in Chicago and meeting with a bunch of people and having a bunch of fun, and I talked about a pizza party that we had, and many of the people that were around that table, including Bob, were invited to do this little project as well. So Bob sent us a list of questions. Marika McKeel, Enoch Sears, Jess Stafford, Andrew Hawkins, Jeff Eccles. We're all going to answer these questions. And I've decided that rather than writing this in a blog post, which I think was the intent, I'm going to be a little rebel here, and I'm going to do it through my podcast. So my questions are going to be sort of an audio blog. I have not prepared answers for these questions, so I'm going to do this live, and we'll see how this works. This might be a complete failure, but I'm hoping that it works. So that's my plan. So let me read Bob's little introduction that he sent along with the questions, and this will sort of give you the context of what we're doing here. It says, I get the same questions all the time, and if you're in a creative field and a visible member of that field, I'm quite sure you get these same questions. In an effort to fill the void, I have collected a new list of the most commonly asked questions and put them together in one place. I'm hoping to, I am also going to reach out to a few other architects I know to get them to answer the same questions, and hopefully I can get a fair number to respond, and I will link to all the participants at the bottom of this post. So that's what is sort of a rough draft of his intro to his post. And so the bunch of us, I think everybody will probably do it. I'd be surprised if we don't, unless we just don't have time. It's one of the reasons I'm doing the podcast, because I have a podcast scheduled. I had not yet recorded it, and so I'm choosing to do this through audio. So I think this will be a lot of fun. So without delaying any further, I'm going to get right into the questions here. So the first question is, what kind of projects were you doing when you first started as an architect? So when I first started as an architect, when I graduated, well, that's it's an interesting question, because I'm going to answer it two ways. I'm going to start by saying, when I graduated college, I went to Roger Williams University in Rhode Island, and I graduated in 1993. And that same year, that summer, I got a job, and it was a small firm in Ridgewood, New Jersey. Barry Postganzer Architect was the name of the firm, one of my early mentors. And he did sort of a mix of architecture. So we did some residential work, and we did some school work and some healthcare work, and some office buildings. And so it was a great place to start off as a young architect, because I got a very broad range of experience, both in architecture types, as well as because it was a small firm and Barry was willing to share what he knew. I learned a lot about the business of architecture through Barry. He was pretty generous with the information that he provided me. I didn't get into any of the numbers, but certainly, you know, the rules of business and many, many lessons that I carry with me today were taught to me by Barry Postganzer. So what kind of projects were you doing when you first started as an architect? So I wasn't yet an architect, so that was an intern. And so that was the type of work we were doing when I first came out of architecture school. But to answer the question specifically, when I first started as an architect, so I was licensed in the early 2000s, and the first, no, 1999, 2000, somewhere around there. I don't remember when I was first licensed. I should probably know that, but I don't remember. It was around there sometime. I'm getting old, so it's hard to remember. So we started Five Cat Studio in 1999. I got licensed soon after that, because we actually started Five Cat Studio as Anne Maria McCarthy Architect. That's my wife and my partner. And she's the boss, and she was licensed at the time. And we started off the firm as Amory McCarthy Architect. And then I got licensed, and we switched the name to McCarthy LePage Architects PC, and we created the brand Five Cat Studio. You can check out other blogs that I've written and podcast episodes. I talk about all about starting as architect. So you can go to entrearchitect.com and go to the search bar and search how did you start, or my first job. You can search for that, and you'll find the whole story about how I first started. But the first type of work we did as Five Cat Studio, we were pretty much taking whatever we could Our first job, our first big job that really launched Vivecat Studio was a restaurant called Meeting House Restaurant. And it was a small restaurant. It was a great project to start off with, a great client who turned into a friend. We got the project through our adopted dog, Albert, also known as Albertus Magnus, Prince of Broadlawns. We adopted Albert from the restaurant's owners, became friends with them, and they needed an architect, and we needed a first job, and so we were there for one another, and they gave us that job. We designed Meeting House Restaurant in Bedford, New York. It's still in business today. New, different owners. Penny, who owned the restaurant at the time, is no longer the owner of that restaurant. But so we did the restaurant, and that restaurant led to another restaurant and a couple of spas. And so we did small, and then we did some boutique retail work. And that's what we did to launch Vivecat. And we did some small residential work. But our passion, Anne-Marie and my passion, is residential and houses. And, well, residential is houses. So we have houses, single family houses. So residential could be more than that, but single family houses specifically. And so about 4 or 5 years into the firm, we made a conscious decision to specialize and create a target market of residential additions and renovations, large projects, budget between $300,000 and $500,000. And that was the work that we really, what we're known for today and what we love to do. And so that was the work that when we had our choice of the work we did, that's the type of work we did. We did not do a lot of new homes because we live and work in Westchester County, New York, about 40 minutes north of New York City. And it's pretty built up. And so there's not a lot of empty lots where there are new houses being built. There are a few, but and we've had a few new homes built, but that's not really what we specialize in. So that answers the first question: what kind of work did we do when we first started as an architect? It was a mix of small retail. We call it boutique retail because they were sort of small stores, you know, really special design. It was a lot of fun designing that kind of stuff. And then we moved into residential work. So the second question, how many projects can you expect to be working on at once? How many projects can we expect? So our current firm is Anne-Marie and myself, and we have one project manager who works from a virtual studio, works from his own remote studio, and so he works with us virtually, but he actually is local. He was a full-time employee. Now he's an independent contractor working from his own space, but he's been with us coming on 10 years. We're, I think, actually right around now is about 10 years, 9 or 10 years. And he works with us, and then we work with a couple of other people remotely who are not local to us that we work through Dropbox and we do things online. And that works out really well as well. So that's the size of our firm right now. When we were a firm of six working from the big studio in one big room, which we were until this past November, we were working on probably 15 projects at once. And remember, our projects are not new homes. They're additions and renovations, and they range from, you know, maybe a kitchen addition renovation kind of project, maybe a $150,000 project, all the way up to maybe a whole house renovation that's close to or over $1 million. And those are the type of projects that we have worked on in the last 10 years or so. And we were probably about 10 to 15 projects when we were a firm of six. Today we are a firm of two with a staff of one, and then we're flexible on the other two that work part time as we need them, and we probably have about I'd say at least 6 to 8 active projects right now. Again, I'm not prepared to answer these questions, so I didn't actually look at my project list, but I would say we're probably 6 to 8 projects right now that are active projects that I'm responsible for. And but again, I'm not working on all of the projects all of the time. In our firm, I'm going to answer the third question, and that'll lead into what I was just about to say. The third question actually is, how often did or do you work in a team? So that I'm going to lead right from the last question right into this one, because we always work as a team. Since we've started, we've worked as a team. My responsibility at Five Cat Studio, I'm the officially my title is partner in charge of operations. And as you know, if you were a listener to this podcast or a reader of the blog, I'm a business freak. And so that's what I love to do. I love to run the business of Five Cat Studio. And my lovely wife, Anne Marie, is an exceptional designer. And so we together make the perfect architect. I stay out of the design and she stays out of the business, and we do a great job together. And we support one another. So I review her designs and she makes the final decision, seeing that she's the boss. And don't tell her I said that. We work as a team, the two of us. And then we also, John Whalen, who is our project manager, is a vital part of our team. Because once Anne-Marie designs it, then he works with Anne-Marie to create the actual construction documents, and then does some of the construction administration. I do much of the construction administration. Every project we do does construction administration. I've talked about that in the past as well. We won't take a project without construction administration. And so every project we do, I am the marketing and sales guy, and so I get the project. And then I also am sort of the face of the firm, so I work with the clients throughout the project. So I'm the one that meets with them and presents the projects to them. But Anne-Marie is the one who designs most of the design. And then John works with Anne-Marie to create the construction documents. And so that's how we work. And then if the projects are larger, or if we're really busy like we are now, we bring on other people on our team and work with them as well. And they fill in the gaps where we need them to be filled in. They do existing conditions and construction documents kind of work when we need them to. And so in my opinion, you certainly could do architecture solo, and I'm sure many sole proprietors do just that. I could not imagine that it would be very easy to do everything, including the business, which I think is a critical part of being an architect. If you're an owner of a firm, there is a massive amount of work to do as a business owner, separate from being an architect. That is a requirement if you want to be successful. And so, to do everything, business and design and face work and construction administration and construction documents, and do it all, you certainly need to limit the number of projects you take. It would be very difficult to work in architecture, in my opinion, completely isolated and solo without a team. So I think you need to work as a team. So the next question, how important is an innovative mind to the company? I think that innovative minds are important. I suppose that you can do, average architecture for average clients and run an average business and not be very innovative. I think you certainly could do that and probably be relatively successful, maybe even very successful, doing that type of work and running a business like that without trying to push the limits. I think to be extremely successful, or to really have a lot of fun in what you do, because I think innovation is fun, then it's very important. At Five Cat Studio, we constantly try to push the envelope of the systems and the way we run our business and the way we market ourselves and the way we use sales systems to get the to actually contract the work that we have. I think from a business point of view, it's very important to be innovative and to be creative. And then from an architecture point of view, even if you're doing work like us, who, you know, we're doing mostly traditional additions and renovations for small, you know, for young families. And even there, we try to have at least one really unique detail on our projects, something that could be photographed when it's all done that's really unique and interesting. And so we try to do that on every job, even jobs that have really limited budgets. We try to be creative and innovative in one small little spot. If we have the budget, we'd love to push the limits as much as we can. I think every architect loves to do that. So how important is it, is an innovative mind in the company? I think it's important if you want to push the limits of what you're doing. What key things do you look for in potential new hires? Okay, so we have an, well, in our freelance work, we're certainly looking for independent workers because those people are working in their own studios, you know, many of them hundreds of thousands, or hundreds of miles away from us, not hundreds of thousands, that would be really, really far, but hundreds of miles away. Well, even thousands of miles away, but not hundreds of thousands. Okay, let's get on with it. When I was hiring in the studio, when I have face-to-face hires, some of the important, what do you look for in potential new hires? Independent workers, independent thinkers. I look for people who are nice. And I know that's a really trite word, but that's a really important word to me. I don't like people who are not nice. I think life is too short to work with people who are angry or bitter. So that's a really critical part for me, is someone who's really just a nice person. I'm an extremely intuitive person. I can meet somebody and know right away whether this person is someone that I'm going to get along with and someone that I'm going to like. And even if they can put on a false front, I'm very good at sort of knowing whether someone is honest or not. And so also honesty is something that I look for in new hires. I think that depending on the job, you know, there's certain levels of experience that you're looking for. I think you can teach a lot of what you need to know. What else would I be looking for in a potential new hire? I don't know. I think honesty, integrity. We have a culture that we try to create in our studio, even virtually now that we're all in separate studios. We still try to create a culture of honesty and integrity and family values, where, you know, the family is important, that you take time off and you know that the people who depend on you are important and at times much more important than the work that you're doing. And so those are things that we look for. We look for people who have interests outside of architecture, because it makes for more interesting people and truthfully more innovative people, because they can pull from other places in their world to create things within architecture. So that's what I look for in new hires. How important is diversity to your company? Well, at Five Cat Studio, we're 50% women-owned business here. Anne-Marie let's say 50% of the people who work full-time at Five Cat Studio are women. Do I get credit for that? Diversity, I think it's important to not discriminate. I personally am for merit. I think that if you can do the job and you can do it well, that despite the gender or the color or the race of the person who's doing it means nothing to me. What matters to me is that they can do the job and do it well, and that they have those values that I talked about in the previous question, that those people are the people that I'm looking for, and it matters not to me what race they are or what gender they are. I understand very, very well that that diversity is an important subject in the profession of architecture. And I think that that we should do whatever we can to encourage people of minority races and women architects to come to the profession. And I think also that it's important for us as small firm architects to find new ways that that the people who have a difficult time, like women who also want to be mothers, if we can find ways that they can do both, I believe that there would be more diversity from a gender point of view in architecture. And I think that's changing now because of the tools that we have and the ideas of virtual studios, and it allows women to be the mothers that they want to be and still return to architecture or continue to work through architecture because of the tools that, you know, work through, you know, integrating their family and their firm and work through motherhood to be able to do both. I think it's easier to do both now and it will only get easier. So I think from a gender point of view, that's what I'm thinking. And then as far as race for me, I wish that wasn't even an issue. And I understand that it's an issue and it's something that's important. And in my firm, it matters not. It matters absolutely not who you are or what color you are. If you can do the job and you're a nice person and you have the values that we're looking for, it does not matter to me where you're from or what color your skin is. That's a big question. And like I said, I was not prepared for it. So I'm hoping I answered that well. Let me know on the show notes whether I did answer that well or not. And if I didn't, let me know why. And tell me what I need to know, because I'm open and I want to learn. And so if I'm wrong with what I'm saying, I love other points of view, and I'd love to have that conversation. So next question, how big of a role does HR play in your company? Well, HR is human resources, and I am it. I do all of the hiring. Anne-Marie gets final approval on any decision, big decision like that I make. But I do all of that kind of work. How big of a role? Not very big. We're actually not growing intentionally. We want to stay small right now, right now the full-time employees are Anne-Marie and myself, and so there's not a whole lot of role for HR at all at Five Cat Studio. Would you say architecture is a field for everyone? Well, everyone is a very big, broad quantity of people. I would say that architecture is not a field for everyone. I think that architecture is a difficult profession, as many of you know who are architects. It is not an easy profession. It is an awesome profession. We get to change people's lives and improve people's lives and create beautiful architecture, and we are the stewards of our environment. We are the ones who decide what these buildings and these environments are going to look like. We are the ones that control that. And so it is an amazing profession to be in. I think it's very, very important profession. But it's a very difficult profession. And the skills and the talents that you have as an architect are not easily obtained. When you start an architecture school, by the end of first year, typically about 50% of the freshman architecture students drop out because they very quickly learn that architecture is not about drawing pretty pictures. It's about space and form and order. And as you advance further in the profession, you learn that architecture is about psychology and sociology and archaeology. And there's a tremendous amount of information that we need to know. We make thousands of decisions on every project. We have tremendous responsibility for life, safety, and welfare of the public and the people using our buildings. It's a tremendous responsibility, at times incredibly stressful, very difficult to be financially successful, although I'm working my brains out to change that for our profession. That can be done, and we are doing it, and I'm teaching others to do it as well. But architecture is not a field for everyone. It's a field for the people who really, and this is another sort of something that you hear in architecture all the time, but you need to have a passion for architecture. You need to have a passion for what you do, and I think you need to have a passion to do whatever you really choose to do to be successful in it. You really need to have this desire to learn everything you can learn and to be everything you can be and to give back everything you can give back. I think that takes a passion. It takes an incredible amount of interest to dedicate yourself to become good at what you do. And I think that applies in every business, but as far as architecture, it applies as well. And so if you don't have a passion for architecture and it's just something that you think would be interesting, every time I tell people that I'm an architect, oh, so what do you do? I'm an architect. Oh, I wanted to be an architect too. But I hear that at least two or three times a week. I wanted to be an architect too. Well, you didn't. You didn't become an architect because it's hard. And you chose to do something else. And so I don't think it's a field for everyone. The next question, what is the best asset in your company? The best asset in my company is easy. The best asset in my company is my wife, Anne Marie McCarthy. She's the best asset in my whole entire life. She, I'm not going to get into why she's awesome as a wife and a mother, but I'm going to get into the fact that she is an exceptional architect. She's a very talented designer, and she's very, very smart. And when we make big decisions, I go to her and I ask her opinion, and she usually is right, even when I don't want her to be. She is the reason we are successful. We make a great partnership, but without her, I could never do what I do. And I think without me, she couldn't really do what she does at the level that she does, because she really has the opportunity to be the architect that she wants to be without worrying about the business. She also gets to be mom when she needs to be mom, and I get to be dad when I get to be dad. But I would say that Five Cat Studio without Anne Marie McCarthy is dead in the water. So that's the best asset in our company. Describe your best employee in one word. I'm going to answer that with the first thing that comes to mind is honest. There's lots of other words that I can go into, just like I did in the question above about our culture. But I think if you have an honest person who works hard and does what they need to do, and they do what they say they're going to do when they say they're going to do it, and you can trust them, and you don't have to worry that you can't trust them, then you have a great employee. I think the best employee is honest. What style of architecture do you love most? Okay. Well, that also is a very big question. The style of architecture that I love to design most would be a residential architecture that is very modern, but has sort of influence and memory from traditional architecture. So pitched roofs, natural materials, but detailed and designed in a very modern way. That's the type of architecture that I love to design most. It's the type of architecture that I would love to live in. I think the type of architecture that I love to look at most would probably be Gothic. I love the cathedrals. I love to walk through those massive spaces, those arches and the buttresses, and to see how they're built and marvel over the way that they lifted those massive stones to those heights, and to create those beautiful shapes and those beautiful forms. That I think Gothic architecture is the most beautiful architecture in the world. And so I would say that from a aesthetic point of view, from an architectural appreciation, I would say Gothic architecture, specifically the cathedrals, would be my most love. Which ones do you love most? That would be my most love. But certainly modern residential would be my most love to design and to live in. And so those are the questions that my friend Bob Borson sent me this afternoon. I hope I answered them well. I hope I didn't offend anybody. I hope I gave some valuable information. And I hope I did what Bob wanted me to do. And I'm going to include the names and the links of the people who are also contributing to this little venture that we're having. And I think it's going to, they used to call this a blog off in the old days of blogging. I don't think they call it a blog off anymore. And this one, I think will have some sort of common theme or common name that we'll all name these posts. And so, you can go to entrearchitect.com/episode37, and that will link you to my blog. And we'll have the links to all the people who are contributing to Bob's frequently asked questions challenge. That's what I'm going to call it. I think that's too long. I think we'll call it something else. But once we figure out what we're going to call it, it'll be titled that. And you'll see it on Twitter. And you can follow me on Twitter at EntreArchitect. You can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/EntreArchitect. You can go to LinkedIn and join the LinkedIn group, the Entrepreneur Architect LinkedIn group, which is over 8,000 members. It's a private group. You have to be accepted and approved. You need to be an architect or a design professional to join that group. Over 8,000 of them are members of that group. So go join that. It's at entrearchitect.com/LinkedIn. We'll give you a link over there, and you could request to join that group. And that's a really active group. There's a lot of conversation going on over there. Whenever somebody has a question, you can post it. There's lots of great articles that people post. There's a lot of activity on that LinkedIn group. So if you're an architect, that's a group that you should be joining, Entrepreneur Architect over at LinkedIn. So that's I'm going to wrap that up. We're coming up on 38, almost 40 minutes here. And I've been talking too much. And I appreciate Bob's invitation for doing this. I appreciate all those people who are contributing. You're good friends, and I appreciate your friendship and your support. And I'll see you on Twitter at EntreArchitect. See you later.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.